Conference record has joined the conference.
All right, Jeremy, still on the line?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, give a little introduction for the readers. I'm here with the multifarious Jeremy Garrett. The master fiddler, songwriter, and vocalist continues his exciting solo career alongside a full-time gig as member of the acclaimed progressive grass quintet, The Infamous String Dusters. This month, Jeremy is releasing a brand new solo album entitled The RV Sessions Volume 2. We're here to talk about the inspiration behind it and other exciting music. Current. Thanks for joining me, Jeremy.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course, like I said, longtime fan, seeing the band progress and grow and change, and it's been a beautiful thing to witness as a audience member. But it's been since the beginning. You've had music in your blood, and you're from a musical family. Could you talk a little bit about your roots, where you grew up, and playing music with your family?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I started playing at a very young age. Around 3 years old, I started playing violin in Suzuki, like a classical method. But my dad was a bluegrass musician and played guitar. And he carried around this old fiddle that he got when he was just a teenager and never really played it, and just sort of always had it in the corner of his place. And later when he had me, he thought, well, I'll get this kid into violin. So he got me into it pretty young, and I was singing also pretty young. So when I was big enough to play it, I was probably around 11 or 12 years old when I finally got that fiddle. So I guess you could say I had my fiddle before I was born. And, so it's always sort of been around. I've had a lot of music in my family. My grandpa was a bluegrass musician as well. So steeped in, you know, traditional bluegrass music, I guess you'd say. And then, you know, went on to play some country and whatnot, moved to Nashville. When I was also in my early 20s, and did about 13 years there. And basically, you know, that's where we all put together the String Dusters, and we all met each other while we were in Nashville, and met a lot of other heavy cats as well through the years, and got into songwriting, and spent a lot of time doing that, especially in the latter years of my stint there. And it was just time. We felt like, my wife and I just felt like it was time to sort of move on. We love the West. We were from Idaho originally, both of us high school sweethearts. So we decided we wanted to head back out west because we love it out here. And but we just didn't know exactly where. And when we sold our house, we couldn't feel ourselves like really like buying a place somewhere sight unseen that we didn't know about. So we just had the idea to buy an RV and travel around and see what places that we liked. And that was over 2 years ago now. So we've been around the United States all the way one time, seen most of the national parks and state parks, all kinds of cool places along the way, and spent the winter, this last winter in Phoenix in the summer type sun, and back here in Colorado over the summer. It's just been an awesome experience and has really inspired me to I don't know, just record a lot of different things, music that I write in the RV, as well as, you know, just, instrumental music comes to my head because of the landscapes that I see. And I'm a very visual person, and so that's sort of how it interprets for me, I guess, eventually.
Absolutely, and hence these RV sessions. Now you're in the second volume, this new release. Are these all previously composed tracks? Are these improvised? Can you talk about the songwriting process and how the RV is the setting changes that?
Sure. Well, on the first one, you know, it was kind of meant to be where everything was recorded. I carry around, you know, decent recording gear in my rig with me wherever we go. And if I can find a quiet place to park my rig, I can fire up everything and and I play guitar, mandolin, fiddle, and other instruments as well, and I sing all the parts. So I can kind of get these things all down in music form on my own without guests. And the first one, I kind of did a lot of vocal stuff, and I co-wrote all the songs. The second one is all instrumental, and I've never done an instrumental record before, and it's also kind of stems from inspiration that I have had from other people that I highly respect in our industry of bluegrass, like Jerry Douglas and Sam Bush and Bela Fleck. All these guys that we admire in our industry have, you know, pursued instrumental music. And so I was feeling the longing for that, and I had these melodies around. And so all these things I composed myself, and, you know, it just kind of comes in different flows. Sometimes it's just a thing that comes to my mind while I'm driving down the road, and I'll record it on my voice memo, and then later I'll have a chance to sit with a guitar maybe and figure out what chords are that, you know, or whatever. Maybe I'll sit with the mandolin and play the melody out and then figure out the chords later. And I just sort of build my tracks. I try to keep everything natural and really raw and not try to overproduce anything, although I'll use some effects when it's appropriate, you know. At least on this one, I kind of just felt like it was a real, you know, I wanted it to be a real natural instrumental thing. And, you know, with the String Dusters, my role in the String Dusters, we have five guys, and we all share everything, the stage and all the way down to the decision-making process. And it's amazing, and we all absolutely, you know, just love it. But if you're an artist like I am, I feel a longing for sort of a little bit more, because I've, you know, practiced guitar and mandolin my entire life. And there's not really a chance at present to incorporate those things in our Dusters show. So, you know, I don't want to lose those skills. And I also, you know, have a love for those things. And so I wanted to pursue that a little more as well.
Yeah. So just to clarify, you tracked and recorded on each instrument. There are no other accompanying musicians. This is all you.
It's all me, baby.
Oh my God. I mean, and to say that I didn't necessarily distinctly recognize any other, you know, when you're not playing your fiddle, you're most commonly, you know, performed in public at least. But wow. I mean, that takes it to a new level. And I did read the press release, but I didn't gather that it was entirely you. So this is a feat, making like organic sound all on your own, and having it really truly evoke like music of Mark O'Connor, Strength in Numbers, Newgrass Revival. I think it's a real gem out there. So you started to touch about on, you know, your outlet of personal musical expression and what you get to express with the Dusters. And obviously the Dusters have progressed with the newer material and newer albums. You wouldn't want to say that it's Newgrass, because that would misrepresent it. How do you personally feel about the direction of the band, the songwriting, and the stretches from where your roots collectively began?
Well, you know, it's art, I guess you can, you know, sum it up like that. And what I mean by that is, it's not, you know, there's some bluegrass bands that are more of a preservation type vibe. You know, they want to preserve their original sound, that original bluegrass type sound. And we've always tried to tap into the more creative and artistic role of our music, and ever pushing the boundaries on that. Not necessarily trying to get so far out that we're just trying to be, you know, abstract artists or something like that. You know, but growing and continuing to evolve into our strengths, you know, the things that are becoming our more and more strengths. Each individual guy is, of course, advancing in what they do all the time. And I feel, you know, really proud to say that I feel like we're in the absolute prime of what we're doing right now. I feel like every guy is playing his absolute best stuff right now. And writing their best songs too, you know, we did a bunch of Dusters records and have grown the whole way. And then this last record that we did was the Ladies and Gentlemen record, where we wrote all the songs and kind of put more of a spin on it with all these lady guest artists. And so some of those songs were more artistic in that way, a little bit more to the type of things where it was on the maybe more feminine side or the lighter side of what we would normally say do in a show, a normal Dusters show. But now we're getting in, we've got this new record that we're getting ready to go into the studio and record. In fact, this next Saturday, we go into the studio and start on the next Dusters record. And we have, you know, I guess around 15 really, really great songs that we're excited about that we're going to go in and try to record and see how it all turns out, see which ones we like the best. So we're really excited about that. And I feel like this one is going to be the quintessential Dusters project for me. You know, like, this is going to be something that I'm super excited about and already, you know, am looking forward to the shows that are upcoming with, you know, Back to Business with all the guys.
Yeah, it's really been a journey for you guys. I mean, it was, you know, to have the membership switch in like the 2000s and it kind of refining it down to your, I think you're in a quintet, and to see you guys grow with Andy Falco, who's just, I mean, clearly, needless to say, phenomenal. Do you feel like, it sounds like you guys are at a very, like, healthy moment as far as, like, your voices being heard individually. Do you feel like it's diplomatic as far as, like, songwriting and creativity in the String Dusters?
Oh, yeah, we're a full-on democracy, I guess you'd say. I mean, we really, I've always tried to be part of something like that in bands past, and but this is probably the truest of that I have ever been. I mean, we are all very serious about that. We really share everything. I think we're good about playing to our strengths as well, hopefully, and not just, you know, watering everything down because we want to share. But also, I feel like everybody's so strong individually that we all know that we should share this thing because that is our strength. You know, even though we all individually are good, we are better with all of us together. You know, the strength in numbers, like you say, you know, that's kind of what it's about. We're definitely a team. And, you know, we've done so much music. We've hung out so much. We know so much about each other and all that kind of thing. It's very family-like. So, you know, with that can come that sort of funny dynamic sometimes. But I would say, you know, along with that is, you know, some of the best music we're ever going to make, probably, right now, you know. And hopefully continuing down that path. And, you know, it's almost like on some of these songs, we're able to read each other's mind. We've been together so much and played so much together now.
Yeah. I mean, no hyperbole. Like, I was at your high school, the high school Telluride late night, bluegrass, like, I don't know, 4 years ago. And I think me and my friends, they're like 12-year veterans of bluegrass, like, looked at each other and we collectively, not to flatter you, but we remember it as maybe the highlight of our collective experience. I mean, you guys have just had this chemistry. I mean, how could it, the Andes and your virtuosity, and it's just, I mean, I'm happy for you guys because I truly believe you guys don't fit into this jam grass thing. You do your own thing. It's really great that, you know, you each have your own voice in the band. And, so just to go back to RV, sessions for a question, you excel in both song crafting and writing evocative lyrics. You know, you wrote some great songs on Silver Sky and Let It Go. But it's all instrumental this time around. So what was the thought behind recording a mostly instrumental record from someone that has those, other attributes?
Well, you know, it's interesting, as coming from I've studied fiddle playing and especially bluegrass fiddle playing extensively in my younger years. And, you know, I've known all about the contest fiddling world as well and known all these fantastic fiddlers. And, you know, in bluegrass, each individual instrument will sometimes put out their featured solo record, you know, and they do that a lot in bluegrass music, you know, like a guitar player will put out his guitar record, you know, maybe they'll do a series. And I've never really done that. And I felt like there was kind of maybe call for that, you know, and I definitely felt like sort of the longing for that, but I've always also been, you know, tried to be smart about my branding and not try to necessarily, you know, be only known as a fiddle player. And so I've tried to be careful about that in the years. And I feel like I've established that I can do these other things now. And so I wanted to try to, you know, give the fiddle a little more focus. Even though I have these other instruments on there, I still feel like it's almost like a fiddle record, but definitely not in the traditional sense, you know, like, You know, I wouldn't go as far as to say that these are compositions either, but I would say somewhere maybe in the middle of that spectrum.
Yeah. It's definitely when you look at the legendary mandolin or fiddlers of progressive brass, they also, you know, when you're playing at that level and understanding, it's helpful to show your fans or, you know, even yourself the capacity to record a record with a full instrumentation and more than what you normally bring to the stage. So I think it's a milestone, and I think it's going to be really well received. So I have to say, as living in the Bay Area and being a big Grateful Dead and Infamous String Dusters fan, that Bill Lesh is fond of you guys. And you guys are, you know, this is just like a totally separate little side question, but it wouldn't be complete for me to not mention that you guys at Lock-In with Phil and Anders Osborne and those and the special drummers, that was quite an interesting set of music, because you guys were playing the entire stringed accompaniment for Phil Lesh. And this is something that he doesn't normally do. And you guys are playing acoustically arranged tunes, Terrapin Station, which is a big number of electric, you know, everything. So how did you all meet Phil? How does rehearsing with Phil work? I mean, how has this become so successful through such different paths?
Well, you know, it's been an amazing you know, acquaintance, I guess you'd say, more than that maybe by now. And he's been real kind to us, letting us share his stage on several occasions, like at the Terrapin Crossroads. And our, you know, our guitar player, Andy Falco, is probably the biggest Grateful Dead fan and has been to see the Grateful Dead some 50-plus times. And, you know, basically, I think he knows every Jerry Garcia break and jam and stuff too, and just all the chords and parts. And so, you know, and all those guys too, Andy Hall and you know, Travis, they all know those songs pretty well in Pandolfi. I'm probably the one that knows the material the least. I'm newest to it because I came, like I said, from more the traditional bluegrass side. But also having been aware of the whole Olden in the Way and that bridge that, you know, we all talk about sometimes. And so I was, you know, I have learned. I would say if I'm at a percentage, I'm maybe nearing finally 70% on the Dead material. So I'm getting there. But I will say I've had a blast, you know, just being part of it. And like I said, he's been very kind to us. And his whole crew, his family, you know, everything has been really great as well. And just genuinely kind people. If I may, I'll tell a quick story of that day to brag on Phil. You know, he apparently had a plane. I guess he was flying on a private jet or a smaller one or something, but the door jammed and they weren't able to close it properly. And so it made him late. No. And I don't know if they got a different plane or fixed it, but he was really late and to get to the airport, and they got a police escort and escorted him out to the festival, which is probably like 45 airport. And we were on a rotating stage. And so we were all sitting, you know, behind the back part, just all set up and ready to roll. And he rolled in, and as soon as he got there, he strapped on the bass and that stage started turning around. And so we just started playing music. So we didn't even get to say hi before the show. But he was such a pro, and we had rehearsed earlier that day, but like I said, these guys know it so well. I mean, it wasn't, you know, hard to do and you know, a joy for us. We didn't like have to learn a bunch of stuff because we kind of already all knew it. So really fun. Really, really fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it speaks to the testament of your guys' collective virtuosity. It's not only tunes like, you know, you know, you play Rosalie McFall, you play Dire Wolf, but you played Scarlet Begonias and you played Terrapin Station. These are tunes that were, you know, electric tunes. And
epic sagas, some of those things too, man. They go on. It's really amazing. And it is fun to try to you know, pick them out on acoustic music, you know, on acoustic instruments, I mean, for sure.
Yeah. Well, look forward to seeing you on October 1st at Terrapin Crossroads, and, you know, just keep up those collabs, and I'm sure it's going to, you know, introduce even more people that, as Sam Bush told me, he's like the percentage of possible fans versus who's actually been exposed. But, I mean, you guys have a great following regardless. So maybe one wrap-it-up question. Sure. Your music fits nicely in the progressive and traditional canons, you know, in the live setting is where the fire happens, but the core of the music is neither, you know, ahead or in the living in the past. So has your popularity in the festival scene motivated and aided in evolving the music you play? And is it possible to balance the expectations of others while also fulfilling your own vision?
Wow, that's a pretty nice question. you know, that's a really great question. You know, I would say as a true artist, and I'm probably more so this way than maybe your average guy, because I'm real serious about originality. And so I have a hard time covering people and cover, you know, doing covers and stuff like that. It's more challenging to me. Takes more energy, for artistic energy, for some reason, whereas I just get more satisfaction out of being original and unique. And so as long as that's happening, I'm happy. But when things happen, you know, and other bandmates have different opinions on this, you know, as far as, like, you know, sometimes you want to play these cover songs, and I understand it, I get it, you know. You know, people want to hear things they recognize sometimes, and it is sometimes a gauge for people to know if you're good or not. You know, like, can you play songs that they know? Like, what is it exactly that you can do? You know, what is your talent range? So it gives them an idea, and it's also just good and fun sometimes to play a song people know. But, you know, it is hard not to follow those, you know, those people's, I don't know, opinions. You know, I feel like we had a few opinions on this ladies and gentlemen thing. I feel like we gained a lot of new fans, but I feel like also our current fans are going, this is really cool, we're excited for our band, but let's go back to the way things were a little bit more, you know. And so as an artist, we're like, well, we can't really just, you know, do it because our fans want it, even though we want to give our fans what they want. We have to be true to our artistry still as well. And I feel like we are going, you know, more and back in that direction. I don't mean to, like, sound misleading, but also, like, I guess to touch on your question, you know, it's kind of like maybe there's a little bit of that right now. And I don't know, maybe some other bands feel that stronger than others. But we've never been... You know, the whole reason why we put the String Dusters together is because we wanted to have our own band. And we'd all had worked in previous band, paying our dues with, you know, other legends and other things before we got this band together. And it was never, you know, about us in that band or, you know, a democracy. It was always about that front person. And so when we put this band together, it was all about, you know, continuing to explore our own creative desires in that way and be artistic. So since that's kind of our founding principle, you know, I feel like hopefully we'll always follow our own path mostly, but we definitely listen to what the fans want and like, and we respect that. And we've got some really amazing fans that have been very supportive. And in fact, not unlike the Grateful Dead, you know, I mean, that business model that they laid down is really incredible, and I've learned a lot about, you know, how that whole scene works and what those guys were able to accomplish, and it's pretty cool to see that spill over into some of the scenes that we're in these days.
And you guys are in a good position because you're in the perfect place of not being excessively huge like the Grateful Dead got, you know, and having, like, your roots and your fan, like, I feel like your core fans by your side. I feel like your core fans are gonna get that evolution and change is always happening as an artist. So hopefully, you know, you guys can find that balance. It's whenever I see you guys, regardless of the new songs or the lesser recognized songs, it's always the Dusters, and it's always, you know, it's always Jeremy and it's always Andy and it's always Chris, so, and Travis, and you guys have a great thing. So, you know, keep it up, and can't wait to see and hear what's next. In the meanwhile, the RV sessions are incredible. I think you should be really proud of the volume 2. And I certainly look forward to seeing everything new from the Dusters and from you.
Well, thanks so much, man. And thanks for all the great questions. I thought your interview was very well done. So thanks a lot for that.
Oh, of course. I mean, like I've been, like I said, I'm from Boulder, Colorado, and been in the bluegrass thing for a while. So you guys are particularly some of my favorites. So I'm glad that you appreciated my questions. And so I will, what I'll do is kind of like get a refined for the internet transcription version of our conversation. And usually it comes out really great. We have a lot of original photos of the Dusters and you performing. So I think it should be some great publicity for the record and just to have it up.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate you guys.
Oh, of course, man. Thanks for reaching out, and look forward to meeting you at Terrapin or something of that nature in the near future.
Yeah, definitely say hi, man, for sure. Please do.
Of course, of course. Well, pleasure talking to you, Jeremy. You have a good day, okay? Right.
Same to you, man. Talk to you later.
Of course, man. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.